Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Put a spring in your step and fresh looks in your home, in-store or online at harrycurry.com.
I want to go, it's another Kerry story actually, but a story of a very different hue. This week, of course, was a very, very big week in a historic week actually for Ireland with that historic apology to the relatives of the Stardust victims. And that triggered a lot of feelings for a lot of our listeners. We've seen other official state apologies in recent years, and I suppose one of the most moving ones of those was for people who had been in mother and baby homes. But there is still a lot of hurt out there because the redress and the apology and all of that didn't cover a lot of people who were caught up in that those very, very dark days. And I want to go to one of those people now, James. James, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
James, you were... Tell me exactly, where were you exactly? Because it wasn't a mother and baby home.
No, I was in the Killarney County home in Kerry.
And this was something that maybe a lot of people wouldn't have been that familiar with, but single girls, unmarried girls, in some cases, ended up in the county homes in around the country.
Yes, they did, I'm sure.
And you were one of those babies that were born in that circumstance?
No. We were children that came from the United Kingdom with my mother. My mother was married. We weren't in a mother and baby home. And that is the question I have for this government, that we do not come under the scheme at all because we weren't in a mother and baby home. My mother abandoned us in the county home. I was 7. Michael, who's now deceased, was 6. And David was 1 year old. And we were there for 10 months. Under the jurisdiction initially of the nuns, who were very cruel and horrible to us, and we had to sleep in a geriatric ward for nearly a whole year, and our little brother was separated from us, and eventually we were boarded out, and that's when we came under the state scheme of the boarded out scheme, which going back to 1925, there was questions about it even then, that it wasn't working, that children were being neglected and abused. And then in 1953, they decided to change the criteria for boarded out children. And one of them was that no elderly couple should get children and that children shouldn't be considered as a form of companionship. It should have been for their stability and affection. Well, in my case, the couple were over 70. And what they put down on their contract, we want this child for companionship. And really, that wasn't the question at all, because Michael and I were boarded out to a village in called Kilgarvan. And Michael and I went to the same family, but two different farms. And you can read between the lines. If they wanted children so badly, why couldn't they take both of us? The reason being, we were taken out to work. That was why we were taken out.
And remind us again, what age were you at that stage, James?
I was 8, Michael was 7.
And what was that work like?
It started off with sweeping the floor and just feeding the chickens, which I didn't mind doing any of that. But then it started to get harder. You were asked to milk cows and you were made to milk them. When it's about the age of 10, I was milking 3 cows before I went to school, feeding chickens, emptying milk pans into the churns for the creamery, making the fire, making the breakfast, cooking the old man's egg. He would give me the cap of the egg, by the way. I never got an egg. Then I'd have to walk 2 miles to school dressed in the most shoddiest of unprotective clothes that anyone could possibly get. If I didn't work or I didn't do that, clean the cows right, you got beaten. My brother was, Michael was the same. And we were forced to work. I lived a whole life of stress. It got so bad.
I'm just sorry, James.
Sorry.
Just the
sorry.
Idea of, I'm just putting you, the picture of you as a little 8, 9, 10-year-old boy.
Yeah.
Without, was there any affection or anyone there to you know, give you any of that, anyone to look after you in that way?
I'm not going to say bad things about people that did good things, because some people were kind to us, not from where I lived. Apart from the old lady that I stayed with, She was kind enough to me, but her husband and her son were the cruelest people you've ever met. And I was sexually abused by both of them. Both of them. I was forced to sleep with their son for 11 years. And in that time, I was sexually abused by him.
Oh, James.
And the thing about it is, I have spoken to Roderick Gorman on this issue, and he said to me that the treatment you received was absolutely appalling, and he would assist me in any way he can. I have emailed him on a number of occasions. I've been on protests. And even though we are going to get a payment from the mother, from the county home, of 12,000, and David will get 15, Michael, unfortunately, is dead, so there's no justice for him. I'm not interested in that. I want recognition, I want an apology, and then redress for the 10 years that we were under state care. They owed us a duty of care, and they breached that duty. And when you breach a duty, you should pay compensation. And as the Article 13 of the Treaty Against... The treatment of cruelty and inhumane and degrading treatment. Mm-hmm. It says that it has to be adequate and fair. And believe me, the offer that he's making to us boarded out children and the adoptees and the people under 6 months, we're going to give you an enhanced medical card, part of a memorialization and counselling. I just want to point out, none of them three things are redress. They're benefits, yes, but they're not redress. And it's an awful insult to us to say that they're giving us this, in spite of the years that I spent in care when I was abused. And my brother Michael was physically abused, but not sexually like I was. And my brother Michael never got over this. He died at the age of 40 when life was supposed to be beginning at 40. And you know, where's the justice for him and the other survivors from different, from the mother and baby home and the boarded out and adoptees that were in a similar position? But as Roderick Gorman said, not all boarded out children suffered abuse. I actually agree with him. They didn't. But not all children from mother and baby homes either suffered from abuse. He pointed out to me at one stage that it was a possibility that children like us could be heard on a case-by-case basis. But now they're retracting that in a statement recently. He sent me an email, and they said under the provisions of the mother and baby home that we couldn't go down that road. I asked him when and if they would ever consider us as a separate group, the group that fell through the cracks and the floor. But I've got no answer.
And when you say the group, are you talking about all the boarded out,
the boarded out
people
out.
And the people who were less than 6 months in mother and baby homes?
Yes, and to make an emphasis of it, if I wasn't in the position where I was abused, I wouldn't be doing this. But I feel that children, and it's been pointed out in the commission's report that a lot of children who were boarded out suffered the worst abuse, and there was at one point during the reading of that commission's report when they said that children were used to fill the labour gap, but they went to farms and girls went to domestic service, and Mr. Varadkar, who was the tarnished in 2021, after I put a question to him in the Dáil about the abuse that we suffered, to give him some credit, he did say to me, "I'm sorry for what happened to you." And he said that he had read the maligned commission's report and that boys were boarded out to farms and girls to domestic service where they suffered abuse and neglect. And that was the point that he made then, that this is something the government cannot ignore, and both he and Mr. Gorman felt the same. Well, if they did, they didn't do anything about it, because they are now, towards the end of 21, when the plan came out, Mr. Gorman said in an interview that there was no redress for the boarded out children. I mean, it's another insult to us. You know,
Will you hang on there, James, please?
Yeah.
Please don't go from us.
No.
I have Pauline hanging on the other line and I want to bring her in if I can.
Okay.
Thanks for that, James. Pauline, good afternoon.
Yes, Katie. Good afternoon. How are you?
You're a survivor of Shanross, Pauline.
Yes, I was there for 3 months till the 1st of October 1949 when I was boarded out to Dunleary. And on the info... Hello?
Yes, yep, I'm hearing
on
you,
the
Pauline.
On my file, they sent me to a family that I never heard of. And when I went looking, they've never heard of the people who I ended up being adopted by.
Mm,
but what I really want to know is they were in charge of... There was a nurse in charge of all us babies in Monkstown Farm. Can I give her a name?
Can we? No, we won't give her a name because we don't know what the background there
that's
is.
Fine. That's fine. Yeah, okay. But she was in charge... In my house, there was myself and two brothers. And on our road, there was at least 8 or 9 nurse babies, we were called.
On the same road, 8 or 9 babies,
yes,
from...
on the same road. From
Shanross or from...
No,
through this nurse.
Wow. Yes.
So she was kind of a conduit for babies,
yes,
to be boarded out.
Yes. Now, we came from all over the country, as far as I know. And when I started looking... Tulsa asked me, had I any information on this nurse? And then about 5 weeks ago, another social worker rang me to see how I was getting on my tracing. And she asked me again, that there's a lot of talk about this nurse, but nobody knows how she was organised and everything. And her name is all, she's also, what do you call it, on my adoption paper. She's a referee. I was eventually adopted when I was 5.
Okay, you were adopted when you were 5, and
yes,
and that was a happy, that was a happy. Yeah.
But before I was adopted, I think my mother's house might have been a resting house for babies. She minded a lot of babies,
right,
and she said I went out 3 times to 3 different families, and each time I came back, and then I was offered to a neighbour, and they wouldn't take me. So then my mother decided, oh, sure, I'll just keep her, you know. And she was very good. She kept 3 of us. But it was that easy. It was that easy.
The babies were just being passed around,
yeah,
like they were
like
a pair
nothing
of shoes or...
Yeah. And from all the moving now, I've suffered terribly with stomach vomiting and all my life. And they say it's trauma from moving and not being...
Yeah,
first
I want. Can
life.
I just get
Sorry.
To that, Pauline? Because there was. I following this debate very closely for very many years. I
yes
worked on a documentary many years ago on mother and baby homes, and there was a sort of an implication that sure, if you were only a small baby, that idea that if you were there for less than 6 months, you were a baby, and sure, there was no, you couldn't possibly, you know, that abuse
well,
or that time
I
couldn't possibly
abused
affect you into your adult
no
life.
No, but all my life, if I go on holiday because of the change, I spend 2 to 3 days in bed. If anything happens big in the family, after, when it's over, I spend 2 or 3 times days in bed. You know, it's just all my life. Anyone who knows me will tell you that. And it's down to trauma because I've had every test you can have, cameras, MRIs, everything. And the only thing they can conclude now is trauma.
And that's from your very earliest days?
Yes, from being passed around, I suppose. Now, I was very lucky. We had lovely parents. I had lovely brothers, 4 brothers. My parents had 2 biological children and 3 of us. 2 were adopted and 1 was fostered. He came from England. His parents were supposedly married, but they had a wedding and they couldn't produce this baby before 9 months. So my mother took him. And he was 12 days old, and he stayed with us all his life, but they never signed him over. They used to visit him till he was about 7, and they used to come in a chauffeur-driven car, and Mammy used to say, oh, and the coats and the shoes, and they stopped. And they had a phone number for the couple, but my dad wouldn't ring them because he said, maybe they're looking for money, maybe they'll take him back and put him into a boarding school. So we never heard from them people again. And then there's another boy, myself and him, were adopted. And we were lucky. When I hear all those terrible stories, that poor man, my God.
Yeah, there's some yes horrific,
oh,
horrific
yes
stories
yes
out there,
yes,
and too many of them.
Yes.
Pauline, will you
yes
stay there? And James, please stay.
I'm
being told I have to take a break, but I want to stay with this. So please stay with us. We'll come after these.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And I want to bring in Christopher now. Christopher, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Christopher, you were what we used to say, a foundling.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
You were found in Cork as a baby.
In Cork, yeah.
And where did you end up?
I ended up at St. Finbar's Hospital.
In Finbar's, St. Finbar's?
Yeah.
And ultimately in St. Patrick's Industrial School, is that right?
Yeah. Now, just in case you want to know, if you're looking for any information about St. Patrick's School in Upton, you will not get any. Because all their papers went to St. Joseph's in Tipperary. And there was a fire there and they all got burned. So that's why you get no information there.
Which is very frustrating. This is such a terrible situation for so many people trying to get a handle on what bit of information exists about themselves. Tell me, you were born in 1944. So you're 80 this year, are you, Christopher?
I am, yeah. According to the paper, I wasn't baptised until the 3rd of March, 45.
Right, okay. Which would have been very unusual at that time.
Yeah.
And there's even some confusion about your name.
There is, yeah. I thought it was, when I was in Upton, as far as I'm concerned, it was changed from McDonald, D-O-N-E-L-L, to McDonald. So I don't even know how that worked out.
And you didn't get your birth cert until you needed it to get married?
Yeah.
In 1970?
Yeah.
So what happened to you in the boarding school, in the industrial school, I should say, in St. Patrick's?
Well, St. Patrick's School was hell in every way, because you were beaten with a stick strap. If the ball went over the wall, you were brought in, you were whacked. Your hair was cut off and everything. They were cruel.
You were boarded out as well, Christopher.
Yeah.
Where did you end up?
I ended up in, it's called, Open Mitchelstown Burst.
In a farming...
In a farming distance.
Set-up, yeah. And was it a similar set-up situation to James in terms of, would you think you were brought there for work?
I was, yeah, but I didn't stay there long.
Right.
I was taken away out of that then and brought back to Upton. And I was taken to Cork's Hotel in Garrisstown. And I got dermatitis there from surf. Then I was brought back to Upton again. Mm-hmm. Right? And then I was passed out again to another crowd.
And how was that?
West Cork.
How was that?
That was okay. Stayed there for a while.
Okay.
No.
But your memories and your time of that time in Upton are very dark, a very black time for you.
Oh, yeah. But I'm looking it up now. I have a lot of good friends, and they're special needs kids up in Portlaoise, where I got a reward one time from the work I do with them. And I have a group here in Limerick, the Brothers of Charity, who I work for 19 years. Mm-hmm. And I have a great relationship with them. Same as I had with the crowd in Portlaoise.
You did qualify for redress then, Christopher?
I did, oh yeah. That was the greatest card of all times.
Why is that?
Because I was brought up to I went up to Dublin. I would sit down in a room and my solicitor went in. I never met anybody from the reversed board. My sister came out and says, "We're going to give you so much, take it or leave it."
Do you want to tell us how much that was?
Well, I can tell you. That's about 20,000.
Right.
Now, the point is, I've never used it.
You've never used it? You've never spent that money?
No.
Why not?
It's dirt money.
Dirt money, you say?
Yeah.
God.
Because you associate that money with what was done to you in that place?
Yeah. Now, my daughter and my grandchild, they can do what they like with it when I'm gone. But as far as I'm concerned, I won't use that money myself. The bank would even tell me it's there for 20 years more, and I never touch it. But I have to keep it recycled every now and again, put in money or take out money out of it. That's the only reason why it's there.
And you know what James was saying about, you know, needing an apology.
You'll never get one. Apology is not written. It's not what the paper is written on. It's the people who did these things. The people should be prosecuted. And that's my argument. Apology. So what happens if you get one tomorrow morning? You have no apology. Apology is no good to me. I don't want to apologize to someone. I had to get on with my life, on my own. No mother, no father. No relatives. But I did it. I did it on my own. And I keep going on my own.
Yeah, fair play to you, Christopher. And fair play, I mean, James, thank you, Christopher. And I'll just let you get your breath there. I just, James, like you, again, just as he said, Christopher saying he got on his own. Like you, amazing with that story that you tell of those all those years of sexual abuse and physical abuse and abandonment and all of that. You ended up with your Leaving Cert and went on to become a lawyer.
Well, I just wanted to point out that you asked me, well, did anyone show me kindness? Well, the old lady that was in the house where I was, she did show me kindness, but it was only when we were on our own. When the husband was there, she just kept in the background.
It sounds like she was afraid of him herself, was she?
She was afraid of him, yeah. She encouraged me to go to school, even though I really wanted to go to school to get away from the house. And the work and the workload and the abuse and calling my family names, saying my mother and father were no good. And I said, I used to stand up for them. I said, you don't know anything about my family. Just going back to when I went there first, I was there about 6 months and a man came. And it turned out to be the old lady's son who lived in Dublin. And she usually used to say to me, can you go out and see if the hens have laid any eggs? Because they didn't want to hear her talking. But I heard him say, who is that? She said, this is a little boy we brought out of the home to do jobs around the house. Can you imagine how that made me feel?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then about 25 years ago, I met another old lady from Kilgarvan, who knew me as a child, and her words were you one of the boys that came to work at the Sullivans? So that's how they viewed us. And that, you know what I said to her? You're exactly right. I am one of those boys that came to work at the Sullivans, because that's what we were there for.
Cheap labour or free labour?
Cheap labour. Well, the Commissioner report says that we fill the labour market, and the children that often worked on farms were neglected. Not all of them, of course. We won't say all of them, but a lot of them were. And Mr. Varadkar acknowledged that, even to me, and to a degree, Mr. Gorman as well. But, you know, when you look at... Sorry,
James, I was just going to say, do you think the ship has sailed for you and for the other people who were boarded out? Or do you think you're going to still keep fighting?
I will, as I told you, I will get an offer of £12,500. And like that man just spoke to you just now, I can't accept that. And why can't I accept it? Because it's an injustice to my brother who died when he was 40. He was found dead on his own in a room, never having got over the torment he went through. And I will fight that government, whatever government it is, with my dying breath. And I just want to say this on the radio, that if I have to sell the house that I'm living in, I'll sell it to fund my legal costs if I can't get legal aid. And I will take this to every court in this country and hopefully to Europe. I recently sent a petition to the European Council, and I got a reply back, and they said they read my petition and it is admissible, and the matter could be heard at Strasbourg once I have dealt with the courts here. Of course, the big hurdle will be the courts here, but I'm determined to do it. I'm 72 years old. I hope I've got another 10 years left in me to do it. And to bring justice, not just for me and my brothers, but for all the boarded out children that have suffered abuse, including the other children from other pathways, and the adoptees and so on. I support all of them.
James,
and I just want to just point out, when them people from the Stardust were given their apology, and good luck to them, and look how long they waited, I just noted one sentence that Mr. Harris gave. He said, "We failed you when you needed us most." Now, when Mr. Martin gave the alleged apology to us, which doesn't include boarded out children from other pathways, he said, "We honoured piety, but failed to show even the basic kindness of those who needed it most." You can see there's a correspondence there to those who needed it most. Yeah. Well, he went on to say that we were exploited, it was unforgivable, and Mr. Gorman then said, "We offered you, the state will engage with empathy, humility and generosity with those who were wronged and strive to rebuild the trust so grievously shattered." Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Gorman and Mr. Martin and Mr. Varadkar, you haven't done that for the boarded out and other children, including the children under 6 months. And I intend, hopefully, with the assistance of some legal services, to take this matter as far as I can.
Okay. Okay, James, I'm sure there's people all over the country who are in the position that you once were in, who will be cheering you on that. Pauline, you're one of them. Would an apology mean something to you? I need to go. I just want to give you the last word in this, Pauline. Would an apology be meaningful to you?
Probably good, but I would rather people be held, or people know how these places were run. Like, there was no duty of care. There was nobody. You were just handed around like a dog. And I suppose apology would be, I don't know, really, Casey.
You want accountability?
Accountability.
Okay.
Hello.
Go.
Yes. Can I just, sorry.
Just very, very briefly, if you can, James.
I'm willing to give you my phone, my mobile number to you. And if any other survivor that suffered similar fate that we did, that wants to take this matter further, please get them to ring me.
OK, well, we'll have your number here, James. Yeah. We won't put it out on air now, but
we'll
have it
now.
Here for anyone who wants to get in touch with you after that.
Yeah. Thank you.
OK, I need to take a break. James, thank you for that. And Pauline and Christopher, thank you so much. We'll take a break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.